Hello again and welcome to another episode of Musings on Golf, where the storytelling today will take us from Pacific Palisades to Mount Everest with a whole lot of smashing glass tossed in for good measure. Yeah, folks, my name is Kelly Elbin, and along with my partner Bob Bupka, we've got some show for you, highlighted by our guest Red Evans, the CEO of the Golf Course Superintendents Association of America, who will try to climb the world's tallest mountain this spring. Bob Bupka, you have in fact told some tall tales in your life, but nothing can match what our friend Rhett is trying to accomplish in just a month or two.
Yeah, very few individuals have ever been able to successfully climb Mount Everest. It's a very dangerous thing. We'll find out from Rhett. It's going to take 55 days to go to the top and safely come back down. A lot of danger involved, but as we'll find out, he's in great shape. He's done some Ironman competitions in the past. I think that Rhett's going to have a lot harder time than Matsuyama did at winning the Genesis Invitational.
Yeah, he will. And a lot of respect for Rhett and a lot of respect for the Golf Course Superintendents Association of America, Bob, and the superintendents who truly make our game what it looks like every day. They are the people who create the services upon which we play and nurture them. And I have so much respect for them, and I know you share that respect as well.
Absolutely. They're beyond any question of a doubt the unsung heroes of the game. I put them at number one, and I put club pros right behind them on the dedication and sacrifice that club pros put out on a daily basis to make more people enjoy this game.
So let's talk for a minute or two about the Genesis Invitational at Riviera Country Club. It was quite a dramatic event. You had ambulances coming into Riviera with Tiger suffering from the flu on the second round after shanking a ball on the 18th hole of his first round, Jordan Spieth being disqualified for signing for a lower score than he had. You had Gary Woodland coming off of brain surgery, Bob, making his first cut. Will Zalatoris, after major back surgery, finishing tied for second. But I was really happy for Hideki Matsuyama. And how can you question a guy going out and shooting 62 on the final round on a great golf course to win? And another in a long line of really great stories on the PGA Tour so far this season in terms of winners.
Yeah, an absolutely incredible performance. When you look at that back nine, two holes back to back, his approach shots from over 200 yards wind up less than a foot from the hole. I mean, I've never seen a shot exhibition to that level. And there's one other thing that happened at Riviera that is not getting the attention that I think it should get. And I'm going to bring it up right now. And that's, they had an opportunity to do an interview with Mackenzie Hughes. He was very brave in his comments. And he said, the time is now that we have to stop talking about money. Everything on the PGA Tour is money, 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 money. He said the fans are getting tired of it. He said, quite frankly, a lot of the players are getting tired of all this back and forth on money. If we continue on this path, spectatorship at golf tournaments is going to decrease by huge amounts, and we certainly don't want that. It's too good a game. It's got too rich a history. It's got too many great champions to have it destroyed by this current battle about money, money, money.
Bob, I'm really glad you brought it up. I agree completely. Not only do I agree with that, but I played in a crazy golf event on Saturday, and I can't tell you how many people I played golf with who are golf fanatics who expressed the same type of feeling that Mackenzie was saying. And for them, it's been, you know what? Never had less interest in the PGA Tour than right now. There's just so much carping going back and forth and the talk about how much this guy's making and that guy's making. Bob, you can't have your fans, particularly your core fans, become apathetic, because if they become apathetic and they start turning away from watching the game other than, say, the four majors, it's really hard to get them back.
Well, that's a good point, Kelly. And realistically, if financial times in the country were booming and everybody had plenty of money, then discussions about money on the PGA Tour probably would be tolerated. But in this day and age where people are losing their jobs, they don't have enough money to support their family, and then you think they're going to be interested in listening to people on the weekend talk about the millions of dollars that they're making? It's a bad recipe, and I know that cake's not going to come out well unless they make some changes.
Agreed. Now, the fact of the matter is, for Hideki Matsuyama, I'm a big fan of his, by the way. I like the way he plays, conducts himself, etc. He won $4 million for this elevated event at Riviera. And here's what he had to say after winning.
そうですね。まあ、このね、大会で優勝することは、目標の一つでしたし、タイガーがホストになってから、なおさらそういう気持ちが強くなったのと、まあ、今日ね、一緒に写真撮りたかったんですけど、まあ、残念でした。
Yeah, you know, to win in this tournament was one of my goals, ever since I became pro. And, you know, after Tiger being the host, that goal became a lot more bigger. A little disappointed that I wasn't able to take a picture with Tiger today.
Happy as I am for Hideki, you said it about, we talked last week, that you don't think Tiger can win another major. Start to wonder if he can finish two rounds of golf. I mean, what we saw was really sad on Friday, and it's a continued trend, whether at Riviera or wherever he's playing. I don't know what the end game is with him, Bob, to be very honest.
Well, the cold hard facts are, realistically, there's no indication from the medical world that, you know, he's in rehab and he's going to get better and he's going to be stronger and he's going to have more endurance, more balance, more power in the future. Those are all the things that Tiger's lacking right now to compete against the best players in the world. And Hideki, in stating his complaints, doesn't even realize what a big problem it is. If you're a Japanese player and you can't get a photograph, they have about 500 photographers covering every event. And Hideki is covered from the morning he wakes up in the morning to, I'm sure, the moment he puts his head down on the pillow. Hideki Matsuyama is bigger in Japan than Tiger Woods. And that's saying something.
Saying a lot. We're going to get to our interview with Red Evans in a little bit. But a few things to cover here. Riviera Country Club, Bob, what a shining star it has been forever. When it was the LA Open for years and years and years, one of the cornerstone events on the PGA Tour. It'll be hosting the 2028, it'll be the Olympic golf venue for the 2028 Olympics when they're held in Los Angeles. Also going to host the 2031 U.S. Open. What a great, truly great golf course Riviera is. I know you've been there, and it's a place the players love to play.
Oh, absolutely incredible. It's certainly one of the landmark golf facilities, I think, in this country. You know, you say Olympic, you can say Augusta National, you can say Pinehurst, you can say Shinnecock. It's of legendary status, and it never lets down. The views are tremendous. The galleries are unbelievable. And it certainly was one of my favorite places to ever cover a professional golf event.
Bob, you know, the powers that be at Augusta National Golf Club have never been reluctant to tweak / make major changes to their famous layout. They've tweaked it a little bit more. So in advance of the Masters this year, we've discovered that the tee box on the par 5 second hole has been moved back about 10 yards and a little bit to the left. It is now the longest hole on the golf course, 585 yards, and not a major deal in a sense, but they're always looking for ways, and I think rightfully so, to better test the pros, the professionals, and the amateurs who play in this modern game of golf.
You know, my question, Kelly, I mean, you add 10 yards to a hole, that's rather significant if it's a flat hole. But if it's a downhill hole, how much does that 10 yards really come into play?
And that's what two is. That's exactly right. Yeah, it's a good point. A really good point. You know, we visited with Kevin Kisner the week he was doing his first of two events as the lead analyst for NBC Sports golf coverage. And I think he's done well so far. I don't know where that all stands, but I do know that Bones McKay is going to be the lead analyst for NBC Sports this week at the Mexico Open at Vedanta. And Bob, you know, Bones on the bag for Phil and others for years, has done really good on-course work for NBC Sports. I think he can be really good in the booth. I don't know if that's going to lead to him getting the job, but it's one more voice that I think they'll certainly factor in. I expect him to do well.
Yeah, I mean, he certainly has a better than average chance of doing well. Having all the talent to perform a certain task is one thing. Being able to perform that task under pressure, which you certainly are when you're on NBC Sports. But yeah. Bones has been around pressure for quite a while. One of the real nice guys out there. Musings on Golf certainly just wishes Bones McKay the very best as he works this week in Mexico.
Bob, I noticed that when Zach Johnson was named the Ryder Cup captain for the United States for the 2023 Ryder Cup, the date that was announced was February 28th of 2022. So we're coming up on that 2 years later. So I don't have any inside scoop, but I would think the PGA of America is pretty close to announcing its captain for the 2025 matches to be held at on Long Island at Bethpage. Again, I've sort of weighed in on this. If Tiger Woods is willing to do it and he sort of wants to do it on his own terms, you know, he sure as heck would be my guy. I'd let him, you know, dictate to the players as opposed to the players dictating to what happened with Zach. But I would expect whoever it is, Bob, I would expect the PGA would have an announcement soon. The Europeans are locked in and I've forgotten his name as we're talking.
Luke Donald.
The Europeans are locked in with Luke Donald, and rightfully so. But that new captain for the U.S. should be on board pretty soon.
Yeah, I'm going to have to disagree with you a little bit. I think PGA of America realizes the importance of naming that next captain with all that transpired over in Rome. I mean, the job's going to have to be done right. Tom Watson, when we spoke to him, voiced some opinion on what the Ryder Cup captain should be and some of the scheduling that's involved by the PGA of America. I would say this might be the toughest it's ever been for the PGA of America, such a wonderful organization. But I think this is going to be the toughest in selecting the next captain than probably any other time in Ryder Cup history.
Well, the great Tom Watson is going to be our guest next week on Musings on Golf. His Watson Links is his newest initiative and an exciting one to get more young people to play the game. I can guarantee you one thing, though, Bob. And I know this for a fact, that Tom Watson never played in the NIP Open. Our buddy Ken Green, who played on the PGA Tour for many years, has had an event literally in his backyard, through his house, over his house, through windows of his home in West Palm Beach, Florida. And along with our buddy Jeff Rude, the great golf writer, I was lucky enough, I think, to play in this event on Saturday. And it was, you know, you hear the term, man, that's the damnedest thing I've ever seen. Well, that was the damnedest thing I've ever seen, and hitting off of air conditioning units and then into wheelbarrows, hitting through broken glass. As Jeff Rude said at the NIP Open, which, by the way, we finished last, but we were first in my book. He said, I broke two windows in the first 17 minutes, and he couldn't have been happier. It is the funniest, craziest event. And then Ken Green kind of holding court at the end of the day with his buddies. It was a scene unlike anything I've ever seen in golf.
Well, I think there was a misspelling on the naming of that open. I got it from reliable sources. It's the Nut Open, and only nuts can play in it. And certainly you were right up top of that invitee list.
And I would be honored to be invited again. It's one of those things. I sent you some pictures yesterday, and you were a little bit dumbfounded, but hey, look, if that's one way to enjoy golf, let me tell you something. We had a great, great afternoon. Let's lead in real quick to Red Evans. You know, we've joked a bit here, not necessarily joked. We talked about him climbing Mount Everest and so forth, but he's done a great job. He's in, I think, his 14th or 15th year as the CEO of the Golf Course Superintendents Association. It's a major job in the golf industry. Red is very much of a unifier, someone who works together with the other major organizations in golf. And just a sharp guy who has a lot of respect from the members, the 20,000 or so members of the GCSAA, and impressive guy in a lot of ways, Bob.
Oh, Rhett's unbelievable, the job he does for the golf course superintendents. And they need a leader like that, because this story has to be told, retold, and told again. I mean, people don't realize, you know, it's very easy to show up at your club on Saturday morning and put your tee in the ground, and it's perfectly manicured, and you get to the green, and it's smooth. And when you're in a bunker, it's all nicely manicured. That doesn't happen by accident, my friends. That's the golf course superintendents that work long hours, often for not a lot of pay. And without them, this game is nowhere near the enjoyment level that it is right now.
And you'll hear the amazing story of Red Evans and the golf course superintendents right after these couple of messages, including one from William and Harry, their golf shoe. Man, Bob, you talk about experiencing the luxury lifestyle both on and off the golf course. It's our friends at William and Harry. Introducing the epitome of golfing elegance and performance from William and Harry. Immerse yourself in style and unparalleled comfort as you step onto the green with William and Harry's unique durable deerskin and calfskin masterpiece. Unrivaled in its water-resistant design, the WH shoe, which is also available in private label, ensures that you stay focused on your swing even in unpredictable weather conditions. Elevate your game to where luxury meets peak performance. Step into excellence. Step into innovation at williamandharry.com.
You flew the trap on 6. You birdied 12 and 13. You closed out the match 4-3. From your numbers to your windows, everything was dialed. That was yesterday. Outperform your best. Titleist, the number one ball in golf.
Welcome back to Musings on Golf. You know, Bob, golf course superintendents are critical to the health of our golf courses and our game, and the education and certification that the 20,000 members of the Golf Course Superintendents Association of America, PSU, is overseen by our guest today. Since 2011, he's been the CEO of the GCSAA, and his stewardship continues to benefit his membership and the game as a whole. And I guarantee you one other thing, he is by far the fittest CEO in our game. Red Evans, welcome to Musings on Golf.
Hey, well, thanks for having me. Looking forward to our time together.
Hi, Red. Bob Bupka here. You know, when I get the bio of future guests, I read it and I make my mental notes on, you know, interesting things about the upcoming guests. And of course, you topped the list with being interesting. But one of the comments, thinking back, I would always say, well, our next guest really has some mountain to climb if he wants to get that accomplished. Little did I know that in the future, I would be fortunate enough to be able to speak to somebody like yourself, Brett Evans, whose future plans are to climb Mount Everest. Now, I understand you did a couple of Ironman contests, but you're making Ironman look like child's play with your endeavor to climb Mount Everest. How did that idea ever originate in Red Evans's mind that he wanted to climb Mount Everest?
It certainly is a big mountain, and it's something that, to be honest, if you asked my mom that question, she would have answered it this way. She said, I started preparing for this when I was 6 months old. They couldn't keep me in the crib, and I've loved to climb my whole life. I grew up in Arizona and just loved being in the mountains and kind of getting out in nature. And over the course of the last decade or so, I've gotten involved in climbing some pretty big peaks and have really enjoyed, you know, pushing myself. And I think, you know, whether you're a climber or you're a golfer or whatever you like to do, a business owner, I'm a firm believer that there's really no growth that comes from just being stagnant and just living in that comfort zone that, you know, we've got to push ourselves. We've got to do some things that are uncomfortable at times. And that's really what I love about, you know, this sport, what I love about mountaineering. You know, climbing big mountains does that for me. It pushes me at times what I think is to my limit, and I somehow get past it. And I think that's when I've been able to learn more about myself and in turn take those learning lessons and life lessons back to what I do here at GCSAA and how we can make the game better and our members better. So I'm real fortunate, and I'm looking forward to climbing Mount Everest. It'll be certainly as you described, a massive, massive undertaking. It's largest mountain in the world, 29,032 feet, and it'll take take a bit of time and endurance to get up there. But looking forward to heading over there in April.
You know, what a marriage. You know, I've been an avid golfer my entire life, and I've gotten to know the best players that have ever played the game on a personal basis. And always, during my entire time, whenever I'd be out on the golf course, if I would see a member of the grounds crew, you know, the superintendents, I'd go out of my way, because I think it's almost an impossible job. You don't have enough men and women, generally. You don't have enough money. And you got the memberships, you know, they want their facility to be Augusta, Georgia. It's really a balancing act between taking what personnel you have and the money they make and putting out the best product.
Yeah, that's so true. And I appreciate, you know, I've followed you and what you've done and for the game, and to hear you talk about the respect that you have for the men and women that, you know, maintain the playing surfaces, you know, across this country, means a lot, because they do go through a lot. And, you know, when you think about it, Bob, their business partner is Mother Nature. And she can be relentless. You know, you look at the, you know, the changes in weather patterns, and you look at all that is thrown at them from increasing costs. You know, certainly, you know, this massive inflation has you know, caused some challenges with the availability of equipment and fertilizers, et cetera. And then, you know, it's bittersweet to some degree. I mean, the game has never been in a better place. 26.6 million golfers right now. The tee sheets are full, which is absolutely fabulous. We're getting new players out there and families, and yet that has, you know, effect on the actual playing surfaces. We've got more wear and tear, less opportunities to do maintenance. And so all of these things, you know, really are, you know, significant demands on the superintendents and their teams. And you said it, Bob, you know, the expectations of golfers are high, and, you know, they pay to play, and we want to deliver the best playing surfaces that we possibly can. And at times those are challenged by budget, by weather, by manpower, labor, et cetera. And so it's a real opportunity that we found here at GCSAA to do all that we can to help provide the tools and the resources for our 20,000 members so that they can overcome some of these challenges. And we're fortunate just to come off of our conference and show in Phoenix, where we just did just that.
Amazing stuff. I understand, in reading up on you, you were director of Parks, Recreation, and Commercial Facilities Division for the city of Mason, Arizona. How did you go from there to your current position as the GCSAA, and did you play golf before starting with the organization?
Yeah, I've really had, you know, probably three stops on my career. I started and have always been around professional sports to some degree. I started with the Utah Jazz under the direction of Larry Miller, who owned the team and owned some other operations, some minor league baseball teams, and started really gravitating towards, you know, recreation and sports. Worked there for some time, and then went on, as you just described, to direct the commercial facilities division in the city of Mesa, Arizona, where we had an 18-hole golf course and a 9-hole golf course, of which were just a joy to run and to be a part of. And then the other component that we had of that leads me to where I am today is the fact that we ran the Chicago Cubs spring training facilities. And so all of the turf and the maintenance care that we were doing on the golf course certainly transfers over to, you know, sports turf and what we were doing with the Cubs. And so just really loved, you know, that aspect of the sport, the operations of it, and got to know GCSAA and all that they stand for, and just loved golf. I played it growing up to some degree, just as a recreational golfer, but that led me to come here to the great state of Kansas, where our headquarters are. We've got our headquarters here, and have been doing it now. This will be going on my 15th year of working with our members and our board to make a difference in the game.
Has the Chiefs celebration quieted down yet, or is it still going on?
Well, you know, unfortunately, the parade really had a, you know, damper put on that. It's just too bad that we live in this world where, you know, we're celebrating a back win, Super Bowl win, and to have the shooting and all the disruption that that has caused, you know, I think has really in some way brought everybody back, you know, to ground level here and recognizing what's most important. And while winning Super Bowls and you know, being at the top of your sport is awesome. At the end of the day, you know, human life and what we're all about in terms of forming those communities and relationships is much more important and bigger than that. And I think this community will rally around each other and be able to overcome what happened at the rally.
I'm going to turn it over to Kelly in a minute, but I can't think of a perfect gentleman to plead my case to. I grew up on the very end of Long Island, and I was playing National, I was playing Shinnecock, I was playing Maidstone. So those golf courses were, as you might imagine, some of the best in the world. When I journeyed away from the east end of Long Island, it came into clear focus what a difference money can make. Because the ones I mentioned, money was not an option. And, you know, generally speaking, golf courses across the country, money is a major concern.
Oh, no doubt. And I think, you know, that's one of the things that, you know, when you look at this industry, we cover the spectrum, and we've got, you know, small nine hole operations that are, you know, rubbing nickels together to make it work. And then to your point, you know, some higher end golf courses that have, you know, the access to some means and to do some things. And, you know, it's really up to us to find that balance and to figure out, you know, what can we do, you know, to help the whole. And I think, you know, we depend upon each other and the game does, you know, there's need for each one of these types of facilities. And the more we can, again, help one another, I think the whole becomes stronger. And, you know, we're fortunate to have members that work at, you know, all the courses you just mentioned and then all of the courses that are on the other side of the spectrum, and we all learn from each other. I'll tell you what, though, that the courses you rattle off are not bad, but I'd have to say my favorite of that group would be Maidstone.
Oh,
what a gem, you know, not to have, I guess they recently put in an irrigation system, but talk about just raw golf and the way that it was meant to be played. That's quite a track.
Well, you just brought a huge smile to the executive producer of Musings on Golf, Jana Self, who's a very accomplished golfer in her own right, had the opportunity to play with me at National. We played Shinnecock, but she absolutely, absolutely thinks Maidstone is at the very top of the list. One quick question. Do you have any superintendents, Rhett, that work at Sand Green facilities?
Huh. You know, I wouldn't call them official members, but we do know of individuals that out in Nebraska, I think there's one, and I ran into one. I can't even remember where I was. It might have been in the Carolinas somewhere, and they did not have, you know, there was no staff on site at the time. You just put a little money in a mason jar there and go about your business. But that's an interesting question. I'll have to dig a little deeper to see if we officially have somebody still maintaining those.
And you'll be amazed, Rhett, there's a Sand Green facility called the Sag Harbor Golf Club. That's within 10 miles of Maidstone National and Shinnecock.
Really?
And that's
wow.
Actually where I started playing. And, you know, it was interesting. You know, when Sand Green, you had a little a roller where your ball is on the green and the cup, and you got to rake it. And I quickly found out the very experienced rakers down on that golf course knew how to make that ball go more in the direction of the hole than anywhere else.
Rhett Evans, the CEO of the Golf Course Superintendents, joining us today on Musings on Golf. Hey, Rhett, for as long as I've been around, and my dad is a golf professional before me, water always been an issue. It doesn't seem to matter necessarily what part of the country. Where are we today in 2024 with the issue of water as it relates to golf? Is it in a critical situation? How do water and golf work together at this point in the history of the game?
Well, Kelly, I'm glad you raised that question, because I think it's something that all of us in this industry, whether we're a PGA professional or we're a recreational golfer or we're in the media, et cetera, need to be fully aware of how serious the water situation is. And even in places where, you know, they may feel like, well, we've got too much water. It rains too much, et cetera. Mm. In those places, we should be worrying about water quality protection. And so water is a massive undertaking that we've got to get right. You can't grow grass without it. You can't have the game without it. And we've got to continue to figure out ways to be more sustainable, to do some practices that will ensure our game for the future. And fortunately, you know, we are making strides and we're doing some great things. We study all U.S. golf courses, and we've been doing it for 20 years, day in and day out, in terms of the resources and the inputs that they consume. And, you know, we've decreased water use by 29%, and we still have, you know, a ways to go there. But as more and better technologies are coming onto the scene, some of which were demonstrated at our conference and show just a couple of weeks ago, where we're able to be much more, I guess, data-driven in terms of our decisions and water use, I'm confident that we're going to be able to continue to be sustainable and keep these golf courses thriving. But it's going to take all of us and an understanding of what needs to change and how we need to make those changes.
Completely understand what you're saying. And it's interesting, isn't it? The different parts of the country, as you said, where, heck, in some places you do have a lot of rainfall and you have a lot of water in general. But I know it's an everyday challenge. Hey, I want to ask you about form of communication. You're obviously a very good communicator. You've done this a long time. A good friend of mine and of yours, Darren Davis, who's a past president of the GCSAA at Old Florida Golf Club over in Naples, is an outstanding communicator. And it seems to me, Rhett, you know, for the golf professional, it's one thing to, you know, talk about the golf swing and things that people can sort of relate to because they're playing the game. Man, it seems to me like when you're the superintendent, you've got to be able to communicate about issues that a lot of members and players at public courses, et cetera, really don't know that much about, but do it in a way that you can understand it and it shines well on you as the deliverer of that information.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I think, you know, growing grass is a prerequisite. I mean, it's just a given, right? You've got to be able to do that, and it's expected. To your point, Kelly, you know, around the communication, I think that's really what differentiates, you know, good superintendents from the best superintendents. They have that ability, you know, to do what I call explain the why, right? It's not good enough just to say, you know, what it is. You've got to teach and to communicate the why. And if you take aerification for an example, you know, how many newsletters or things have you seen? Hey, we're going to be aerifying the greens on Friday, versus, you know, an explanation of, hey, we're going to be doing this on Friday and here's why. Exactly. You know, we want the greens to be healthy going into the winter. Hey, we want the greens to be firmer and faster and stronger and have a deeper root zone. Well, as a golfer, if I hear that and I understand the why we're doing certain things that affects me on that particular day, I think I'm going to be more apathetic and understanding versus just walking away with some frustration. And so it's vital, you know, that we're communicating. I think that goes back to your earlier question about the water and what we need to be doing there. It's not just what, hey, let's, you know, do this or do that. No, why do we need to do this? Well, we need to do this because golf is under attack. And every day, you know, I work on the fourth floor here of our building, and I purposely sit right next to our government affairs group, and there's not a day that goes by that we're not having some conversations about water. We're not having some conversations about an HOA or a group that is looking to, you know, make some changes to water allocations, et cetera. And golf has to have, you know, seat at that table to explain that we're wise users of it and that we don't overuse. And here's what we're doing with best practices to manage that resource.
We were down in Cape Town and asked to play a golf course, and they directed us right in the middle of the city. We walked out to the first tee. I was down there with my club pro from Long Island, one of my dear friends, been a 50-plus year friend, but he made the trip with us. And we get to the first tee, and this gentleman approaches us and says, "Do you have your sandbag?" And I said, "What?" He says, "In order to play this golf course, you have to have a sandbag." I said, "He's right over here. Bob Joyce is his name. He's my club pro." But at this club, Rhett, you had to go in the pro shop and buy a little bag of sand for $3. And whenever you made a divot hole, you had to replace it with this sand. And it's the only golf course in the world that I've played that sell sandbags. Do you know of any?
I don't know anyone that's selling them, but I'll tell you, there's some great programs out there, you know, in terms of replacing your divots and doing some things to help the course care. And I love what the AJGA, the American Junior Golf Association, does, you know, at their tournaments with these young kids, and they're hoofing their own clubs, and they put a bottle of seed mix, sand mix, on their clubs. And they're teaching them at a young age that, hey, let's leave this thing the way we found it. And ultimately, you know, you're going to not find yourself in so many bad lies if we can take care of this thing. So I love that. I love the fact that people get involved and take ownership and take some pride in the place they're playing.
I know your organization is big in charity. Can you talk about that arm of the Golf Course Superintendents Association?
Yeah, so we've got certainly the association that, you know, provides the tools and the education for our 20,000 members. We've got a GCSA foundation that really is fundamental to, I think, golf as a whole, not just our members. But it's the philanthropic arm of GCSAA, and we raise money for science, technology, engineering, all those things and environmental tools that our members need to produce great playing surfaces, and they support great programs. You know, one of them is a First Green program that, you know, takes young people out to the golf course, gets them outside the four walls of a classroom where they get to learn literally about science, technology, engineering, arts, and math or STEAM education. And, you know, the superintendents teach that, and they have various pods. They get to do everything from looking at wildlife habitats, soil science, environmental sustainability, mathematics, water conservation. And it's those types of things that I think are critical that the foundation funds in order to really tell this story and to get that outreach that is needed with this younger generation, where they can understand the beauty of nature, beauty of a golf course, what it provides to a community and its environmental benefits. So we're super excited about that program and that the foundation can support that.
Now we're just about to the home hold in our visit with Rhett Evans, the CEO of the Golf Course Superintendents Association of America, here on Musings on Golf. Hey, Rhett, you mentioned earlier 26.6 million people playing our great game in this country in a kind of a weird way. But the fact is that COVID had a lot to do with that. A lot of people simply took up the game, being outdoors, et cetera. I wondered, from your standpoint, overseeing an organization where your superintendents had to be there, had to take care of the golf course, what was it like dealing with COVID for the organization at large, but I guess really more to the matter for your 20,000 members?
Yeah, it was certainly a trying time, right, for everyone. We didn't know what the outcome was going to be, but looking back on it in hindsight, it was really a great opportunity to bring people together. And, you know, I've said it before that, you know, Noah didn't build the ark when it was raining. Unfortunately, you know, we had already put some things in place with our membership and with our allied organizations before COVID hit. we had a grassroots ambassador program in place that aligns a GCSA member with all 535 congressional districts in the United States. And so we already had relationships in place. And so, you know, when COVID hit, we were able to pick up the phone and call the 50 governors. We were able to pick up the phone and call the mayors and the senators and members of Congress and explain, you know, that, hey, we had a plan that we could put golf back in play. We felt that obviously we had essential workers that needed to be out there to take care of the golf course, but that we could be an outlet, you know, for these millions of people that needed to get out of their home and do something that would bring them together. And I think the Back to Golf, working with the PGA of America, working with the NGCOA, the owners and others, we were able to do that. And we had that arc and it was ready to float and it floated. And we've been riding that wave ever since. It's just wonderful to see the benefits that came out of a tragedy, in this case, COVID.
Oh, that's so great to hear. Final question for me before I turn it over to Bob to close out our time with you. We like to ask our guests who would round out a dream foursome for you. Whether those individuals are still with us or gone before us, who would round out your foursome?
Yeah, probably the easiest question the two of you have thrown at me this afternoon, because I would just go with my family. I have a brother who has Down syndrome. He plays golf in Arizona on the Special Olympics team, and having him next to me would be wonderful. Along with my father, he and I have played a round or two and really enjoy the time together. And then my grandfather on my mom's side, who passed away, who introduced me to the game at Apache Wells Golf Course in Mesa, Arizona, as I was a young tight riding on his lap on his golf cart. So those three and myself would be a wonderful opportunity and something I would greatly treasure.
Well, you brought a little tear to my eye with that selection. Good job, Red. One other thing, just had this idea. I don't know if you can make it work or not, but as you plan to climb Mount Everest, is there any way of putting on board a massive amount of gear that you're going to take up there, a little golf club and a golf ball, and if you just take a swing at it, you'll become the guy to hit the highest tee shot ever from the highest tee on this planet. Is that possible?
Well, Bob, don't think I have not thought of that, and I'm actually working on that now. I have a telescoping club that someone gave me, and I've hit balls off of Mount Elbrus in Russia, Aconcagua in South America, and Kilimanjaro in Africa, and a lot of other peaks. And this one's going to be a little more interesting just because of the altitude and the weight. But if nothing else, I'll get a ball up there and figure out some way to knock it off and do what you just described.
How long will you mention about heading to Everest in April? How long is this whole voyage going to take?
So in and out, it's roughly 50 days.
Hardly time to sneak in a round of golf. I did interview Alan Shepard, who hit a golf ball on the moon. So if you do it on Mount Everest, that's quite a twosome I'll be able to brag about.
Boy, I'll say. But it'll be great trek. It takes some time, and it's just all about acclimatizing and kind of getting your body to change and adapt to the altitude. And we'll keep holding the fort down and pressing forward and making the game better and our members better while I'm up there.
Well, you certainly are doing a tremendous amount to make the game better. And you're also doing a tremendous amount to the superintendents that give so much of their time across the country, and you're making their job easier, more appreciated, and I can't think of a group that are more dedicated than golf course superintendents that work on golf courses, not only here in the United States, but around the world.
Well, thanks, Bob, and I appreciate your recognizing them, and they truly are, as Jim Nantz said the other day, he's having a conversation with Dottie Pepper, one of our old Tom Morris Award winners, that they're the unsung heroes. And I think they appreciate all that they do to get the courses set up, and not just at tournaments, but for daily play. And I'm so proud of our 20,000 members, and my hat's off to them as well.
Introducing the epitome of golfing elegance and performance from William & Harry. Immerse yourself in style and unparalleled comfort as you step onto the green with William & Harry's unique durable deerskin and calfskin masterpiece. Unrivaled in its water-resistant design, the new and improved WH shoe, which is also available in private label, ensures that you stay focused on your swing, even in unpredictable weather conditions. So elevate your game to where luxury meets peak performance. Step into excellence. Step into innovation at williamandharry.com. Well, Bob, you can bet we'll have Red Evans back on after his voyage to Mount Everest. I can't wait to talk to him and find out what has to be, and for him, for just about anybody, would be an experience of a lifetime.
Yeah, and you know, I'm so excited about the future of William and Harry. I had opportunity to spend some time with Rhett Butler on the phone, and when I heard the future plans and the direction that William and Harry is going to be going, everybody's going to want a pair of those shoes, especially the Python edition. I hear it's going to have plenty of bite in it.
A lot of bite, a lot of cool stuff coming up from them. And we're so excited next week. First of all, thank you to Red Evans. So excited next week to welcome in Tom Watson, who was so generous with his time in talking about Watson Links and about, you know, not only his accomplishments, Bob, and his memories. We've got Royal Troon coming up this year on the Rota for the Open Championship, and Tom won there in 82, but also his thoughts on the current game, the Ryder Cup, et cetera. Our listeners are absolutely going to enjoy, and it's hard not to enjoy hearing from Tom Watson.
And that's for sure. One of the true, true gentlemen that ever played the game. And I still remember Turnberry, that infamous 72nd hole where his second shot deserved better results than it was given. And he ended up making bogey and then losing in a playoff to Stewart Cink. That would have been, as I say in the show, not only the biggest story in golf, probably the biggest story in sports ever for a 59-year-old to go out and win an Open Championship. Absolutely things that dreams are made of. And I know Doug Sanders had that famous line. I've always asked Doug about that short putt he missed on the 72nd hole at St. Andrews, which would have won him the Open Championship. And when I say to him, "Do you ever think about that putt?" Doug used to say to me, "Heck no, Bob. 5 minutes goes by sometimes without me ever thinking about it."
And I know for Tom, it's still out there, but he also has had a great perspective on the game, and it's going to be a terrific interview. For Bob Bupka, his caddy, Kelly Elpin, signing off. Musings on Golf.